you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Zander Olivet, on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, aka Beastcino, and with me on the line is the Dark Fool. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm enjoying another one of our shows, coffee and all, and I've just been, you know, just, I don't know, busy as of late. I've been enjoying what's been going on YouTube, and I'm ready and excited to do this, man.
Rock and roll, man. Well, today's topic I was kind of hoping would be something that'd be of interest to people. We've only got a couple people at this point in the chat room and who's logged in as guests, so they're not even going to be contributing, but that's okay. I mean,
they don't count. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, all that's really important here now is that they, if they haven't done so already, click the little follow button or the Facebook like button. Something, you know, leave a comment, that'd be awesome. You know, it is what it is, and I guess we'll get there when we get there. So I've been doing a lot of research lately for my up-and-coming book, which admittedly, the more and more research that I do, the more and more things that I want to work into it, the further and further away from actually having a published entity I come. So one of the sections that I'm working on is the self-mastery section, and in it I'm proposing a couple of different ideas or concepts for people. The first concept is one that I think is pretty much obvious, at least to Satanists, that the world in itself is sometimes very hostile or adversarial in nature. So that's where the whole premise of this mastery section begins, is the fact that you have to negotiate in an environment that could very well make you the victim. Kind of indicates something in my mind. It indicates that you have to have some kind of codified system to work within in yourself. You know, you have to have a certain set of ideals and principles to build up on and accomplish anything with, whether it's, you know, getting married or choosing what field of work you want to go in. You know, you kind of have to negotiate yourself in such a way that you get the maximum potential from anything. And by maximum potential, what I mean is that if you get the most that you can out of any experience that you have. I've talked in the past about my little formula about, you know, cost versus necessity over benefit, and how my mindset kind of works off of those principles, that I weigh everything out in terms of its value to me. Whether that's not the only thing that's entailed in my system of thinking. Another thing that I definitely wholeheartedly resonate with and advocate or try to put into use is the concept that you only do something when there's something to gain from it. That, you know, you shouldn't make efforts that are futile, and there's no end goal. All the things that you have should be focused on accomplishing something. Otherwise, life itself becomes not so worth living.
So far, so good.
Yeah. So in that, well, how do you determine what, you know, what's something that's worth pursuing?
Don't open the door without finding out.
How do you, you know, how do you pursue? How do you determine that you are pursuing something worth pursuing? There is.
Sorry, I was somewhat distracted by your background noise.
Yeah, I'm somewhat distracted by my background noise at the moment. Somebody's at my door, and I'm not really sure what the deal is. So hang on just a minute, okay?
Sure, sure. Anyway, check out The Ooze on Facebook. Click the follow button, and let's see if I can remind people that the call-in number is... I don't have it in front of me, because I'm ill-prepared. Ain't that cool? The Ooze call-in number is 347-989-1371. And after we are done with the explanation and getting into the topic, I encourage all of you to call in. That would be great. So anyway, okay then. Looking at porn. Do-do-do-do. More porn. More porn. More porn. Ah! More porn. No, okay. Yeah. Hello? How are you? Won't you tell me your name? All right. Uncomfortable silence. I have no idea who's even in the chat room, so I think I'll start addressing that.
All right, kids, I'm back.
All right, welcome back.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had some unexpected visitors show up, and I had to take care of it real quick. So we got a caller on the line. Let me go ahead and pull them on real quick.
All right.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's him, guys.
Hey, what's going
on? How you doing?
Hey, it's an interesting topic. I wanted to hear from you to see if you've done any comparison to, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because that's what it sounds like.
You know what? I was going to bring that up. In fact, you beat me to it, but I actually compared what he listed to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later. But first, TC, you weren't done explaining it, correct?
No, I wasn't finished explaining it. And actually, yes, these six things are somewhat based off of the Maslow's hierarchy of need. I'm a huge fan of that. But, you know, these six things actually originally were presented to me by a motivational speaker in one of the meetings that I attended with my corporate office. And it seems to reason, I've altered them to kind of fit more with what I think is realistic, but it seems to reason that there are six reasons or a combination of these reasons for a person to have motivation to do any of these things. And so from here, I guess the only thing I can really do is talk about what these reasons are. But before we do that, let's hear what you had to say about Maslow's hierarchy of need and its comparison to my six factors.
Okay. Well, I mean, I basically did a comparison as to where they would fall on the chart. And, you know, I could be wrong. These are just my off-the-cuff interpretations, you know, a couple minutes before the show. So, I mean, very much open to discussion. Let's see. As far as, I mean, they're all going to be kind of out of order, you know, where you listed them, TC. So
right.
I am just going to show where they present themselves. Okay. So first off, I mean, Also, one request before I get started. Could you also link people to a picture of the hierarchy of needs in the description so they have a visual to kind of look at, you know, later on?
Okay. I will. I'll put a link up the wiki page for folks so that they can just go ahead and reference it directly right there.
Awesome. Okay. Now, starting at the bottom, you know, you have your physiological, that is, you know, breathing, food, water, you know, basic survival skills. Up from that is safety, security, employment, resources, morality, family, love and belonging, friendship, family, sexual intimacy, esteem, confidence, self-esteem, achievement, respect of others. And then, of course, the last one, self-actualization, which is like morality, creativity, lack of prejudice, acceptance of facts. Where I see your six things, preservation and pain avoidance, I see that as in between safety and physiological. Where I see pleasure and profit, I see it falling into the category of esteem, love, belonging, and safety, you know, kind of like in the middle of the pyramid.
Right.
Prestige and pain affliction, I see it as fitting into esteem, love, belonging, safety, and pain affliction could also belong to love and belonging, which is the friends, family, because, I mean, that kind of goes into, like, sexual sadism and that sort of thing. So I kind of left that into sort of a gray area. And finally, power, I put into safety, love, belonging, and esteem, again, the base of the pyramid. And the reason why a lot of the stuff goes into the base of the pyramid is because physiological is just focusing on surviving, like, you know, your basic fight or flight. You're not interested in anything that you – the only thing you have to gain is, like, life and just being alive. So you're doing everything you can just to take care of that one need. Everything else is just kind of, you know, secondary to that. And also why I put none of these in self-actualization is because I see self-actualization as a culmination of all of these efforts. So for all of your six things, I would say all of those combined would go into self-actualization after all of them have been achieved.
I think that's a very working explanation of the actual hierarchy of need itself. And I'm glad that you drew the correlation that you did between each thing, because they all sort of pertain to the levels that you were discussing. The difference being Maslow's hierarchy of need was more based on coming at it from a primitive or a biological standpoint and saying, you know, you need these things to reach each of these levels, and you know, so you're going to naturally kind of go after it, where what I'm talking about, why I'm proposing these six, is because they are six modes of thinking, or six things that people wish to attain in their life to make their life worth living. So I think that's why all six of them go together nicely at the top of the pyramid. I'd be interested to see what you guys think of each of these categories, because the categories themselves were distinctly proposed the way they are with some intentionality behind it. And I'm kind of curious as to if the intentionality is to detect, or if it's something that I'll actually need to further explain. So anybody have any comments before we actually go into what each of these six things is?
I do, but I want to have our guest go first. Hello?
You guys are breaking up really bad. So
oh, I'm sorry.
Know
I said, yes.
How we think, what we think of the model?
Right. What do you think of the model? Yes. Not the Maslow's model, but the six that I've proposed. Do you think that there is something outside of these six categories that would be a motive for actually doing something?
Well, I would say, like, I don't know how it would fit into this model, but of thinking, but
where you see yourself, because where you see yourself would affect all of these six modes of thinking.
Oh, I would agree with that, but you wouldn't do something just to see yourself. That wouldn't be a motivation. What I'm looking for here is a category that be a motivating factor for somebody to actually act.
I follow.
Absolutely, your perception of yourself is definitely going to affect how you achieve, negotiate for, and strategize to get any one of these six principles. Preservation, I'm sorry, before that, Dark Fool, you had some commentary on it?
Yes. What I love about, I mean, like I said, I'm a big fan of the hierarchy of needs. In fact, I think it definitely needs some looking into in order to understand, you know, like where these things fall. Because what you, the six that you listed, what I love about them when you compare them to the hierarchy of needs is that they're kind of all over the map, you know, and they're not in any really specific order. So they're kind of like, instead of going, okay, first you take care of the physiological, then you take care of the safety, then you take care of the love of the lung. Instead, it's like you're taking care of them all at once, you know, based on the situation.
Right.
Yeah, based on the situation and based on the, you know, what's needed at the time. So there's very much no, like, order in which to do it. It's more like what, you know, you have to take them all in and kind of internalize them in order to understand, like, when the situation presents itself, you act accordingly. That's what I like about what you've presented so far.
Hey, Matt, did you look at any of the criticisms of Maslow's hierarchy, you know, how it's been critiqued as far as, like, being too individualistic?
You know, to be honest with you, I have not had the chance to look into that. Could you enlighten me, please?
Yeah, for example, you know, where sex might be placed on the pyramid. The main criticism of the pyramid is that, you know, Maslow may have put sex at the bottom, where somebody might actually put it at the top if their whole life and, you know, driving force, you know, like people who live in sexual lifestyles, for instance. That would be their entire lifestyle. Like every motivation that they put in place would be surrounding that lifestyle to their actualization.
And you know what? Based on what you've said so far, that's what I like about the, you know, for pleasure, doing things for pleasure that Beast brought up, is that it kind of just, you know, no matter where it falls on the quote-unquote pyramid, it's like it is a need that needs to be addressed, and it doesn't matter what order it goes into. As far as where it goes on the pyramid, I'd say that it's a pretty, I think we can all agree, especially left-hand path Satanists, what have you, can agree that sexuality is a pretty base instinct, and it needs to be let out. You know, like pent-up frustration, pent-up sexuality needs to be let out. And I think that once you get into fetishes is actually once you've explored sexuality. So it can actually work in both places. I would put it at the bottom personally.
I have a little bit of commentary here because one of the things not addressed in the initial criticism is the fact that the sex that's actually being proposed on the physiological level in Maslow's hierarchy is not the actual attainment of sex, but the ability to have it, meaning you've got all the functioning pieces and parts of, you know, you can go through the motions and successfully do that. Somebody who was born short of their testicles may never actually reach a state of self-actualization because they can't fulfill that basic need of being able to reproduce. You'll find that the type of sexuality or sexual intimacy that we're actually talking about, if you refer to this model on the screen, is on the third level of love and belonging. It's actually higher up on the chart as something
right.
That needs to be achieved, but it's still, as Matt was saying, and correctly so, a base need that has to be fulfilled.
I agree with that.
So, my thing of it is, I wasn't looking so much for why people do things as to what reasons a person should have for doing things. You know, not, in other words, separating from the actual primitive, natural human state of things to things that you make conscious decisions upon. You know, like, for instance, someone might go, well, why would somebody want to be homosexual? And they can look at my chart and go, oh, to obtain pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be the reason why they're doing it.
And the beautiful thing about what you just stated is that it doesn't matter if you are born heterosexual or homosexual. It's like, first, you need to make sure that the parts function, and then you have to make sure whether you're getting, you know, attainment out of it.
Right, right. So what I was dealing with this six is more the upper half of Maslow's hierarchy, or at least the model of it. But I don't think I was necessarily vectoring it in comparison with Maslow's hierarchy. So I think it's kind of cool that you guys brought that up. That's neat. Should we discuss categories a little bit?
You know, I have something that I would very much like to bring up, but we can bring it up a little bit later. I want to talk about the pain and pleasure principle of Sigmund Freud that he wrote about, Beyond the Pleasure Principle, and I think that very much applies to both models that you presented. But very much, I would like to get into the categorization. I kind of want to save it for last.
Okay. All right. Preservation is the first one I have listed. Preservation, obviously, is not just in the physiological sense, but in an emotional sense, in a intellectual sense, psychological sense. You know, I'm trying to think of what other type of preservation might be necessary, a financial sense. So those things could be, you know, reasons for doing something, motivators that will give you the clue that, yes, this is something worthy of my time to do. And is there any other type of preservation you guys can think of that I haven't covered?
I can think of one. You know, like some people throw themselves into preservation groups, you know, like they feel like they identify with being a part of a group, so in order to preserve that group's, you know, pure culture or pure identity, they identify with it.
Ah.
So that's what I was thinking, you know, like, for instance,
less,
like the area.
Less individualistic and more holistic and more societal.
Right, but because they self-identify with that specific group, they believe it to be part of their own preservation.
Right, so it's a mimetic preservation is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that fits very well. That's something I'll definitely have to include in the chapter. The next one's pleasure or experience. I had a really hard time because to me, all experience that I have is pleasurable to an extent. I've had new sensations or maybe romanticizing old sensations, whatever, you know, whatever it might be. I think that, you know, people would, when they do things, they should do things for an experience.
I would agree. I can even say that when people, when they consider pleasure, they always think of something that's enjoyable. But it doesn't necessarily have to be enjoyable for you to derive pleasure from it.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think that's kind of going to tie into what Matt wants to talk about after we're done covering the categories and the pleasure pain principle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
I think that experience is a vital thing. People often will incite drama on the internet for the experience of seeing how many people come out of the woodwork to lambaste them and kind of give them that masochistic satisfaction. That's
guilty is charged. Sorry.
Or even recognition, which also falls into the prestige category.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is actually something that me and Nicole, my significant other, were discussing just prior to the show, and the fact that each of these categories is interchangeable to some extent with another category or all of the other categories in there. They all work together.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly enough, as humans, we tend to categorize things without realizing that there's always that big overlap. That's why I love those, I forget what they're called, Venn diagram, I think is what it's called. You know, the circles with the other circles that overlap them. And kind
oh,
of
yes, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that experience is much like that. So that's definitely one person, the one reason why I think people should act for the experience. Profit, that's the next one. Now, by profit, I don't just mean financial gain, but I mean gain of any kind, intellectually, emotionally, anytime that you benefit over your previous situation, you have profited. So I think profit's a motivation that people should have. Pain. Pain is an interesting motive because in some cases we want to avoid it.
Wait, really quickly, did you skip prestige?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I did skip prestige. I'm sorry. Prestige, I mean, that's obvious. We all want that reassurance, that sense of security, and that kind of ties in with the preservation. Yeah, we want some kind of clean conscience. I don't know what else to say other than we need the affections of other people. And those affections, you know, those give us a sense of prestige. So, do you guys have anything to say about prestige?
Prestige, that's an interesting one, especially if, you know, when I'm relating that to people on the left-hand path. I mean, there's some people that have so much of a strong ego and so much of a strong will and consciousness in and of themselves that they don't need the reassurance of others. So, I mean, that's very much an interesting one right there to bring up, especially in this context and in this setting.
It's still prestige in that you self-recognize versus seeking the recognition of others. That's the way I see it.
Right.
True. It kind of has a combination of both, though. It really does.
Yeah, it does. I would agree. Because people, as soon as they've been recognized, boy, they like to tote that around, you know, like, I've been recognized as such and such in such and such organization, or I have these letters that follow my name, so I'm going to put it on every single thing I sign just so people recognize me as, you know, this prestigious person.
Right on. I think, you know, prestige is definitely something. And we're talking about...
Some people will fake it. Some people will fake the prestige just to get ahead.
Right. And what I'm really talking about here, and I suppose we could get into the fact that there are also false senses of attainment with all six of these categories. You can attain them within a false sense, you know, not legitimately have them. I think that's something that we should keep in mind as well. But the motivation is obviously to get attain the true or the right of each of these categories.
Well, perspective is extremely important. Like, if you have a false sense of security, you know, your whole, you know, everything you've built up, whether you think it's preservation, pleasure, anything that fits in these categories is going to fall down like a stack of cards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which kind of then brings us to the next category, which is pain. And again...
By the way, I meant house of cards, not stack of cards. My bad. Go ahead.
Right. That's fine, man. Pain itself is a fun motivator because I know I only listed avoidance and infliction under this because I believe the other forms of pain are more related to the other categories rather than pain itself, like masochism, you know, the seeking out of the experience of pain is more for pleasure than it is for the actual pain factor of it. And likewise of being... a hermit is more for the complete avoidance of pain, and so it would be more for security than it would be for pain itself. But what do you guys think about pain? Because people are motivated by pain a lot. Like,
oh yeah, well there's proactionary and reactionary. There's masochism and sadism. If you'll notice, when I compared it to Maslow's hierarchy, I broke it down in like. Specifically, avoidance kind of goes here and affliction kind of goes there. Avoidance of pain is definitely, I would consider, for the self-preservation. You know, but affliction is kind of to demonstrate your own power, which also leads into the next category, which you're going to present.
And pain can even correlate to profit, too, because some people, you know, will feel the pain of economic strife, so they try to take measures to avoid this economic pain and seek more profit. So then profit is the motivating factor for avoiding the pain.
Beautifully stated. Beautifully stated. And in fact, if you look anywhere in any society, whether it's capitalistic, socialism, you'll notice that and Anton LaVey even wrote that in the Satanic Bible. I mean, could we continue to exist if we did not prey upon each other?
Right. We prey upon each other in so many different ways, even emotionally.
Exactly.
Like, even with the prestige, if someone recognizes someone else's prestige, that can invoke feelings of envy. True envy is, I want what you have and more.
Yeah, the haves versus the have-nots. I mean,
I'm not a big follower of Karl Marx,
but he hit it right on the head with that. And I'm getting a severe echo.
Yeah, you are.
Is there an echo?
Let's see, now. Yes, still there.
Is it just with your phone? Because I'm not hearing it.
I was hearing it on my end. Now I'm getting it.
Okay. All right. I'm not really sure what's going on because it's not echoing on my end at all, so that means that you guys' transmission is coming through clear.
We're probably on the same cell phone tower.
Oh, actually, I'm using a landline this time.
Interesting. That's probably just a strain of Blog Talk Radio trying to do its thing. I don't know.
Rebuffering or something, yeah.
Yeah. The final category, power. Power is something that I think sometimes can be misunderstood. Power doesn't necessarily have to be this, aristocratic, tyrannical thing. Power can often be sometimes just having the ability to do something. You know, that becomes your power. When you can do something, then obviously it's a power to have. So, you know, when it gives you the ability to achieve power, then that's a good thing. Are we still on the line here? I'm still here. All right. So people would obviously do things to try to attain power. You know, some kind of strength or ability outside of what they have currently, which obviously then ties to profit and it ties into pleasure and security and all that stuff. So interestingly, each of these factors, while seemingly separate, they all overlap, which is, I think, again, indicative of what Matt was stating in the very beginning half of the show, which is that the self-actualization part of it is the ability to utilize each of these tools.
Right. Now, I personally, when I compared your system to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I kind of put it in the base of the pyramid, like with safety, love and belonging, and esteem. Not to be confused with the physiological. The physiological is base stuff, and so it's not at the bottom, and it's not at the top of self-actualization. And reason being is I totally agree with the Nietzschean concept of the will to power. I think everybody has it, and, you know, to lesser or greater extents, but I think everybody has it to some degree. And so, I mean, I think power is, again, one of those things that leads to self-actualization, and that it is not self-actualization in and of itself.
I might actually kind of differ on that, and I would say that self-actualization is the ability to actualize yourself. So it is a power. It's an action. It's something you are doing.
Would you say it's a different kind of power?
Well, ultimately, yeah, it may be a different variety of it, but it's all the same thing. It's all the same thing that we're trying to express when we talk about power.
Yeah, I would consider power to land on every bit of that pyramid, because what is power but you know, enacting your will to do something or achieve something or get over on someone or putting your will in action.
In that case, okay, I'm going to borrow a little bit from the satanic/Luciferian paradigm. Like, let's say you have base... I mean, my basic question before I really get into this is, do you see two different types of power, or many different types of power? Like, for example, like, you have the base one, which covers, like, I'm above you, I can take care of, you know, like, I'll handle you if you dare step up to me, or a higher power, as in, you know, there's something that goes beyond all of us, and after I've achieved everything, I'm in touch with that kind of power. Do you kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah, in my thought process, you're projecting your own power externally, so it's still the same thing to me.
Yeah, it's just the end of a spectrum versus the other. I really like it when Jason King said on this show some time ago that there is not really those extremes that we picture, the right and wrong, but there's all these different variations in between, these small shades or levels of intensity of, or however you want to describe that. I like to look at that kind of more holistically than, you know, it's been presented.
So power would be more of a holistic sense rather than compartmentalized.
Well, the thing about the holistic philosophy, at least from my understanding, is that you're talking about every extremity of it. So the most minute degree of power versus the absolute of power, it's all on the same spectrum.
Okay. My next question to you, Beast, would be, what do you think of the Nietzschean concept of the will to power? How would you see that fitting within the model?
Refresh my mind exactly what the Nietzschean concept of the will to power is.
Let me see here. Yeah, sadly, I don't have that offhand, but what I can tell you based off of memory, hopefully that's... You know what? Let me just pull it up here really quick. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I would rather not be talking out my ass, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Okay, the Nietzschean will to power, as quoted from Wikipedia, here we go, is a prominent concept by Friedrich Nietzsche. The will to power describes that Nietzsche believed to be the main driving... force in man, achievement, ambition, the striving to reach the highest possible position in life. These are all manifestations of the will to power.
It sounds more to me like, it's just a more ultimate sense of power. What you're talking about is, you know, you're trying to get each one of these six categories in line. The strive upwards,
right,
is exactly that. You're going for pleasure, you're going for profit, you're going for prestige, you're going for
even self-preservation, physiological.
Right. So I would say that the concept is, it fits hand in hand with what I'm talking about.
Right. Okay. So it, in a sense, it covers every base, just like how your model covers, in different areas, it covers every base of the pyramid.
Right. Well, the thing of it is that what you're talking about is what I would consider the self-actualized version of power, the fully actualized understanding power.
Got it. So the end tying in with the beginning, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, more of the understanding of the whole concept.
Right, the entire spectrum.
Right.
Okay. Right. Now, the next thing I wanted to bring up, since we've got more than enough time, and this one's a pretty big topic, Beyond the Pleasure Principle, Sigmund Freud, which I'm a huge fan of. Now, pain, you know, avoidance of pain and infliction of pain and doing things for pleasure brought up in your model, would these have to do with a sense of self-preservation? Yes, definitely. But what about that same kind of instinct, I mean, that actually leads one towards destructive ends? I mean, a lot of things done for pleasure are not necessarily in the best interest of the species or of the individual. no offense, TC, but smoking, I always find it interesting how there's always that drive to have a cigarette, or there's always that drive to, you know, indulge in these things like gluttony, and that's actually more harmful than it is good, but it's still fulfilling a pleasure principle.
Yeah, it's still fulfilling a pleasure principle. That's the point. It's as Khorasan said, or Allison said earlier in the show, the perspective has a big part to do with this. You know, these factors, these motives are really almost meaningless without the perspective being added to it. So the drive to smoke a cigarette, even though you're not really physically profiting from it and it compromises your security, it just means that you hold the value of the pleasure drawn from the cigarette over the value of what you would gain from, you know, looking at it from other perspectives.
All right, let's even look at the drama junkies. The drama junkies are causing themselves pain by always being in a perpetual state of drama, but obviously they derive some sort of pleasure from it, or otherwise they wouldn't do it. It's a motivating factor.
And there's actually something that I would like to bring up within the pleasure principle that that ties in, that kind of explains that and examines that. And it was actually when Sigmund Freud was researching the behaviorisms of a small child. And one of the things, you know, the child play role is this child would constantly, when he was frustrated, take toys and, you know, kind of like dramatize the situation. I mean, we kind of reached this on a couple shows back, but they would dramatize the situation and then he would throw them away and bring them back. And the same thing with trauma victims is that they would have nightmares of their trauma. You know, their dreams would kind of simulate the tragedy and the trauma that they'd gone through, like war victims, for example. Now, what these two have in common is that the dramatization was, in a sense, you know, Freud concluded that the dramatization and the dreaming and all that, you know, being processed by the brain was reenacting the traumatic act in order to gain mastery over it.
That's a sound theory. I mean, I'd be interested to see how modern science views it now, or at least modern psychology.
Exactly. And that's why when it comes to pain, it's like, it's contrary. I mean, it's funny because this is why I think of it. I don't think of it like Freud did. I love that Freud wrote so much on the topic, but I don't agree with him splitting up. This is a pain instinct and this is a pleasure instinct. This is a death drive. This is a life drive. No, I kind of view it as Carl Jung did, you know, kind of holistically, in the sense that, you know, when you have that kind of thing where they take a traumatic experience and relive it, obviously that's contrary to the pleasure and that's contrary to the survival. You know, we don't want, as species, we don't really want displeasure. We would rather have pleasure over displeasure, but in order to gain mastery over it, that is an ultimate sense of pleasure and that is a sense of transcendence.
Absolutely. It's a very good point you just brought up there. I'm trying to actually think if I have anything to add to that. I think that was very well said.
Thank you.
No, not drawing anything else. So we got about 16 minutes left. Anybody got any other ideas of anything they want to talk about with this? After going through this, is there anything I need to work on clarity with, or does it seem to be a working model?
I'd say, you know what, there is something I would like to bring up. You know, I often use this example to demonstrate sometimes how I think and how I perceive things and why I could be so, like, okay, not to toot my own horn here, but I can be smart in some areas and a complete jackass in others. And it's like this, okay. I compare it to, like, two downloading models. You know, you look at, like, LimeWire, which is peer-to-peer, and then you have, like, BitTorrent, which is, like, multiple peers coming in at once. And if you notice, peer-to-peer starts from 0% and goes all the way up to 100% when you're done downloading. The BitTorrent model takes bits and pieces. Like, you can get a fraction of the 2% here, you can get the 5% there, the 20% there, and the 1%. And it just kind of fades in until it fills in the gap. And what I like about the system that you use is that it's like the BitTorrent one where it just kind of grabs all at once, whereas the Maslow is like one after the other after the other.
Right. I honestly think that there's even some more support for the principles that I'm proposing here in Sun Tzu's Art of War, but at this point I've become pretty much sure to try to outline my thoughts on it. Still, interestingly enough, I think that this six factors definitely gives people a gauge to what things are worth their energy. You know, you can quickly then examine whatever you're looking at potentially doing and decide, you know, based on percentage of gain of any of these one categories, if it's worthy of doing or not.
Hey, TC, can you tie it into fourth way, like identifying and imagining?
Yeah, well, not identifying and imagining, but Gurdjieff talked a lot about conscious influences. And this is actually where identifying and imagining stem from, that they're forms of influences. Influenced by the things that you identify with, you're influenced by the things that you imagine. Each of these things are things that you would consciously need to consider your influences of. In a sense, what I'm talking about is choosing what you'll be influenced by.
Right, like I was thinking along the lines of, okay, like when you are about to do something, or you're considering doing something, usually think about it first, imagining, and then you might identify with one of these six actions, like I'm doing this for profit, or I'm about to do this for profit. But you might be doing it for another reason, but you're imagining that you're doing it for another reason. Do you follow?
Yeah.
Right. You consciously say, I'm going to do this because, you know, I'm going to do it for my family. When in really, you could be so insecure from something that happened in your childhood. So subconsciously, you're saying, I'm fulfilling a need to fulfill that need that was not fulfilled in the past.
Right. So essentially, one of your eyes is influencing your other eyes.
Well, I certainly view that as being a potential danger. I think that's directly relative to perspective again. I think, again, it's, you know, consciously, and by conscious, I guess in my mind, when I'm consciously doing something, I'm evaluating its effect on every level, and that would be on my subconscious as well. So I would throw the what if I'm doing it for this other purpose instead of what I'm stating, doing it for up. If that makes sense to you.
You know what? I think right now would be a good time to bring up an example. You know. Let's say you felt an overwhelming need to lead people into the new age. But then, if you really look at it, you might have some deeper psychological issue that needs examining. You know, like the basis of a messiah complex.
Absolutely. That actually directly comes from the negative connotation of considering. When you externally consider something to a fault, which would be known as identifying. Identification is obviously where you perceive that you have the same traits as something or someone else, and so that you can impose your will upon them in that way. That's why it's a dangerous thing, because if you perceive that someone else and you are the same, then when you try to impose your will, you always will overstep that boundary that's actually between you and the other person. It's why it's not a good idea to identify. But I think these are things that you obviously should have to master separately before you actually work with the six factors. You shouldn't be doing anything until you're sure that what you're doing all of you is in agreement with, if you know what I'm saying. All of your centers, all of your eyes, all are in agreement with working. And this is what Gurdjieff talks about when he talks about forming a chief eye or a...
the chief eye, yeah. Okay.
Well, I always think of it in the context of it's called work because you continue to do it. It's not like you have worked, it's work. So
there you
We're compulsive by nature. So in a perfect world, we would before taking the action, the motivating action. But in reality, you know, people do this all the time, even if they're involved in the work.
You know what? You bring up an excellent point. That's why a lot of people rest on their laurels after they think that they have achieved something. Then their ego steps in and say, ha-ha, I have achieved it. And, you know, this is an excellent example of this is seen in the Lucifer principle of when, you know, even nations get to that point where they're comfortable and, you know, then all of a sudden they collapse. Or they fall under a different empire, so to speak, and they say they turn to themselves and they turn to the others around them and say, where did we go wrong? That's because you didn't stop being vigilant. You stopped being vigilant. You rested on your laurels and you thought you had control when in fact your ego, your counterproductive pride controlled you.
Right.
You know, it's kind of interesting how people do things. I don't know if you guys have the same kind of experience I do, but when I want to grab the cup of tea that's in front of me, I for a second will kind of picture myself doing it. I will imagine myself doing it and then immediately commence action afterwards. I'll visualize what I'm doing before I do it. I don't know if you guys find yourselves doing that, but that's the way that I conduct myself.
I do that from time to time. I mean, I'm not completely impulsive. I've been known to be impulsive, but, you know, I do think out my actions. It's when you're really emotionally tied into something that you tend to slip up. You know, if you learn how to cut that off, I think you have a better chance of thinking through the actions and consequences more clearly.
Right on.
I'm always focused on time. Time is one of my worst enemies. So I always imagine myself doing something the most efficiently before I actually do it so that I can save time. And I end up running myself in circles. So rather than I see myself grabbing the cup of tea, but I also want a cigarette with the tea. So I envision myself being able to grab the cigarettes and the tea at the same time, and either I'll knock the cup over or I'll run myself in circles where I didn't really save any time doing anything.
You created more work for yourself.
Yeah, so that's my biggest downfall. I can admit that.
I noticed some time ago in relation to time that it seemed to be this natural tendency whenever I was having a good time would pass very quickly. But if it was some time that I needed to end because it's just unbearable to deal with, it seemed to take forever. And I came to realizing that what it is, it's during the unbearable time, we're paying attention to it. You know, you're literally watching the clock, if you know what I mean. And so time seems to move very slow at that point. The same kind of model can happen all the way around if you're always conscious of your time. So I'm kind of curious as to how, Allison, you're losing time when you're actually being focused on being efficient with it.
Well, I was going to say earlier that ties in with emotion. I think your emotions are so fixed on getting that done that it ends up overshooting the mark, so to speak, you know, and creating more problems.
I think she fell off the line. Yeah, she did. That's okay. We only have 5 minutes left. Not a big deal. This is a piece of my own personal philosophy, putting it out there. I was wondering if I was going to get any naysayers or anybody who disagreed with any of the concepts that I was putting out there. I'd like some feedback from everybody. You can catch me at theooze@fearthebeast.com. That's email. You can comment right on the page. I'm on Satanic International Network at least two or three nights a week. Go ahead.
I actually have one thought that crossed my mind. Do you think that there might be some instability in your system? Since, okay, Maslow has a one step at a time, whereas you're kind of taking everything in all at once. Do you think that could create some instability? You know, and maybe at the end you might not be as stable as you thought you were?
Here's my thoughts on that, because the answer is not that the system itself would cause instability. The system itself is not meant to be used by someone who hasn't already come to a state of self-actualization. You have to start off with the mindset that I'm on a level playing field at this point, you know? And then from there, you can negotiate your motions to what you're doing. So I guess what I'm saying is you need to have yourself to the state of a mature, well-adjusted, rational being before you can begin to actually use this. So this is why I kept going back to the point that Allison made about perception being everything, because if you don't come at it from the right perception, you'll indefinitely not experience the effects that you want to experience. Yeah.
This might open it up to a part two as to what makes the right perception. But anyways, might leave that for another show. Are we out of time right now?
We've got 3 minutes, man. So.
Oh, okay. Roll outro or keep going?
Well, whatever. If you got anything you want to talk about, now's the time.
Well, I think that would, well, I don't think 3 or 2 minutes would cover that one, like what makes the right perspective, unless you disagree.
Oh, I'm with you that that's worthy of a whole show, so possibly we'll be doing this about 3 weeks. Oh, we could talk about what next week's show is.
Well, there you go.
Next week on Saturday, we're doing fascism and Satanism, is that correct?
Oh, is it next Saturday? I scheduled it for, on my video, I put on the 30th, because we wanted at least a few weeks to see if we could get some guests in there.
Okay, so that's on the 30th. All right, so everybody scratch that. That's on the 30th. Next week, then, we'll talk about, what were we just saying? What makes it a right decision?
What makes it a right perspective to start
a right
the system?
Yeah, we could talk about perspective and how you come to a right perspective. I mean, it's obviously going to be variable no matter what, but to a certain extent, you can obtain a unified set of negotiators, you know?
There you go.
Yeah. So, that's it.
Well, I'd say despite the technical difficulties, this was a good show.
Right on. All right, well, let's roll out the outro.
All right, see you next time, folks.
You can join us tomorrow night for the Outbreak Edition, too. I keep forgetting to mention that. We'll be talking about the things they taught us in school that were wrong.
Ah, dude, I'll be there.
Talk to you all then.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Satanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?